Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter number 2, text number 21.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Vidyate Hridayada Krantishchidyante Sarvasangshaya. Chiyante Chasya Karmani Drishya Evatmanishvare.
Thus the knot in the heart is pierced, and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. Attaining scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead means seeing one's own self simultaneously. As far as the identity of the living being as spirit self is concerned, there are a number of speculations and misgivings. The materialist does not believe in the existence of the spirit self, and empiric philosophers believe in the impersonal feature of the whole spirit without individuality of the living beings. But the transcendentalists affirm that the soul and the supersoul are two different identities, qualitatively one, but quantitatively different. There are many other theories, but all these different speculations are at once cleared off as soon as Sri Krishna is realized in truth by the process of bhakti yoga. Sri Krishna is like the sun, and the materialistic speculations about the absolute truth are like the darkest midnight. As soon as the Krishna sun is arisen within one's heart, the darkness of materialistic speculations about the absolute truth and the living beings is at once cleared off. In the presence of the sun, the darkness cannot stand, and the relative truths that were hidden within the dense darkness of ignorance become clearly manifested by the mercy of Krishna, who is residing in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. In the Bhagavad Gita 10.11, the Lord says that in order to show special favor to his pure devotees, he personally eradicates the dense darkness of all misgivings by switching on the light of pure knowledge within the heart of the devotee. Therefore, because the personality of Godhead is taking charge of illuminating the heart of his devotee, certainly a devotee engaged in his service in transcendental love cannot remain in darkness. Note the distinction here. There is serving which could be mechanically done without love, you see. And here we see serving in transcendental love. So that's an important aspect. You must do your service in transcendental love, and then you will not be in the darkness. You'll be in a state of illumination, enlightenment. Continuing on, he comes to know everything of the absolute and the relative truths. The devotee cannot remain in darkness, and because a devotee is enlightened by the personality of Godhead, his knowledge is certainly perfect. This is not the case for those who speculate on the absolute truth by dint of their own limited power of approach. Perfect knowledge is called parampara, or deductive knowledge coming down from the authority to the submissive aural receiver, who is bona fide by service and surrender. One cannot challenge the authority of the Supreme and know him also at the same time. He reserves the right of not being exposed to such a challenging spirit of an insignificant spark of the whole, a spark subjected to the control of illusory energy. The devotees are submissive, and therefore the transcendental knowledge descends from the personality of Godhead to Brahma, and from Brahma to his sons and disciples in succession. This process is helped by the super soul within such devotees. That is the perfect way of learning transcendental knowledge. This enlightenment perfectly enables the devotee to distinguish spirit from matter, because the knot of spirit and matter is untied by the Lord. This knot is called ahankara, and it falsely obliges a living being to become identified with matter. As soon as this knot is loosened, therefore, all the clouds of doubt are at once cleared off. One sees his master and fully engages himself in transcendental loving service of the Lord, making a full termination of a chain of fruitive action. In material existence, a living being creates his own chain of fruitive work and enjoys the good and bad effects of those actions life after life. But as soon as he engages himself in the loving service of the Lord, he at once becomes free from the chain of karma. His actions no longer create any reaction. Oma jnana timarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur niritam jena tasmai shigarve nama. Thus the knot in the heart is pierced, and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruitive actions is terminated when one sees the self as master. So, there is a knot in the heart, as described here, Hridaya Granti. It's a very, very hard knot of material attachment, material affection, material identification, material consciousness, or you could say material unconsciousness, which has become tied up very, very, very tightly in our hearts. If there is a knot which is very, very, very complicated knot, one can try to untie that knot. But that is very difficult. It is a knot that has been tied again and again, this way and that way, so many, like big ball knot. It's not easy to untie such a knot going in and untie. The easiest thing is to take a sword and just go, just cut through it. So this is the way that the knot is actually untied. It's untied by being cut. Another meaning of the word sadhu is one who cuts. In this material world, no one likes to be cut. No one is very eager to hear cutting remarks also. But actually, we require to hear the cutting remarks from the sadhus, to cut through the hard knot in the heart. When an ordinary materialistic person says cutting words, he's simply trying to put himself up. It's called one-upmanship. He wants to put himself up by putting us down. But when the pure devotee, the sadhu, when he cuts us, he gives us some cutting words, it is not for putting us down. It is for help. It is for bringing us up. So, for materialists, cutting means putting down. But for spiritualists, cutting means elevating. when he wants the cutting word to the sadhu actually elevate the consciousness. The sadhu desires to liberate us from our bewilderment within the modes, therefore he gives us some cutting words to bring us to our senses. So when we hear the cutting words of the sadhus, the cutting words of the scriptures, and we take them very seriously, we don't try to block them out. This is why submissive hearing is very important. If you go to the doctor and he tries to give you some medicine, you close your mouth and won't let him put, you know, he tries to give you an injection, you just, you know, you won't let him put the needle in your arm. And how can the doctor cure you? One has to submit. Approaching the doctor is not good enough. Now that you're there, you have to submit to him. He says, do this, do that. You have to do what he said. So, we have to be submissive. We have to follow the instructions we receive from our spiritual master, from the Vaishnavas. In this way, the medicine will take effect, the hard knot in the heart will become destroyed, dissolved by the pure chanting of Krishna's names, and as described here, we will see the self as master. So what does that mean, seeing the self as master? In one sense, seeing the self as master is a bad thing. That's the problem we have. We think I'm the master. So how can we say that seeing the self as master is connected with the termination of the chain of fruit of actions? How can we possibly say that? You could interpret this phrase as meaning a lording over propensity. One sees the self as master. Yes, I am the master. I am the lord of all I survey. But obviously that's not what it means. You can understand by the context, by having a basic knowledge of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. This is obviously not the meaning. What it actually means is that one realizes what is the actual self, the spirit self, not the false covering of the self. One actually realizes what is the real self. And the fact is that when the self does become master, Goswami, Vacha Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jivan, in this way, Vacha Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Javopasta Vegam, Etan Vitanyo Vishaheta Dira Saravam Apimam Prithivim Shishashyat. That one who can bring his senses under control, mind, the words, the anger, the tongue, the belly, and the genitals, one who can bring his or her senses under control becomes known as a Goswami, and such a person can make disciples all over the world. Now these Rithvik, these foolish Rithvik people, they say that, no, only Srila Prabhupada can initiate disciples all over the world. But that's not what Rupa Goswami said. Rupa Goswami said that anyone who can control his senses can initiate disciples all over the world. So who will we listen to? Will we listen to the Rithvik philosophers? Will we listen to Prabhupada's explanation of what acharyas have taught? We have to understand things clearly. So to see the self as master means that you become established as a Goswami. Well, we may say, well, I'm a householder, how can I be a Goswami? I'm in the dark well of household life. So how could I possibly be a Goswami? Okay, just checking. So, the answer is that Prabhupada said that everyone should be a Goswami, not just the sannyasi. Everyone can engage all their senses in the service of Krishna. That is Goswami. And it doesn't matter what is your ashram. You may be a brahmachari, a brahmacharini, you may be a sannyasi, you may be a householder, whatever you may be. You may be a traveling preacher, you may be a corporate worker, whatever you're doing, if you will always keep your senses, mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals, if you will always keep your senses very nicely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then the self is actually master. So, it says here, when one sees the self as master, well, you can't just keep it theoretical. You have to make it practical also. Someone says, well, I understand that actually I meant to be the master of my senses. And I really am, but somehow I'm not doing it. No, you have to actually do it. If you want the chain of fruitive actions to be terminated, if you want to transform your destiny out of the karma chakra, then you really do have to practically manifest controlling your senses. Theoretical knowledge is good, but it must be backed up with practical application. Theoretical knowledge without practical application is not a very valuable thing. It's not. Not very valuable. You may have a very good understanding of our philosophy, but if your practice is not on the same level as your realizations, then you have problems. You have problems. You won't feel that, you won't taste the actual full nectar of Krishna consciousness. So one has to, therefore, actually become a master. Practically speaking, a master. You have to become a master. One who masters the mind, one who masters the speech, one who masters all the activities of the body. You have to always be introspective. You have to always be observing. What am I doing now? What am I thinking now? How is the mind absorbed? What is coming out of my mouth right now? Is it Krishna conscious? Is it pleasing to my spiritual master what I'm saying right now? Or is it my false ego just doing another little dance routine? Prabhupada explains, a gentleman thinks twice before speaking anything. See, that's great. I'm a woman, so I don't have to worry about it. No, that means a lady or a gentleman. Has to think. Should think twice before speaking anything. Not that I just blurt something out of my mouth thoughtlessly. A Krishna conscious person is very, very thoughtful. They don't speak something without considering carefully what they're saying. Just, some little false egoistic blurting out. They don't do that. They restrict themselves. One is meant to curb down the material senses. Keep them controlled nicely. Keep them disciplined. Just like the cowboy riding the horse. He puts the bridle on the horse. He keeps the horse under control. He does not let the horse run wild. So one has to keep the horse of one's senses under control. One does not let them run wild. Wild horse. It's very dangerous to be on a wild horse who's gone out of control, who becomes frightened by something and just goes off running willy-nilly. You can die. You can be killed easily if you're on a horse that goes wild. He can come under a branch and hit you. He has no consideration. You can easily be killed on a wild horse. So, one can easily be spiritually killed if one's senses are wild. So one has to be very, very careful. We've seen many devotees come to our movement. They even got big positions, but they let their senses go wild and they were spiritually killed by them. One has to always keep one's senses in check. Is this an authorized thing for my mind to be absorbed in right now? Is this an authorized thing for my tongue to be saying right now? Is this an authorized activity for my body to be engaged in right now? If not, why am I doing it? I'm just giving in to my senses. We have to be very, very cautious. Otherwise, we can be finished off by the material nature. All the austerities and the penances we have done to advance ourselves in Krishna consciousness can be spoiled very quickly by one uncontrolled act of sense gratification. So therefore we have to always be very, very careful, always very, very vigilant. My mind Krishna conscious right now. Is this a proper thought that I should be having right now? And if it's not, nip it. Immediately nip it. Don't allow it to go on. It'll get worse. Jayato vishayam pumsam. In this way, if one contemplates the objects of the senses, one will develop attachment for them. And from that attachment, one will become lusty. That's a fact. And when you don't get your lusty desires fulfilled, you become angry. When you become angry, then you lose your intelligence. And you fall down again into the cycle of birth and death. So therefore we should be very careful not to give the senses freedom to do whatever they want. We should keep the senses very, very tightly under control so that we can actually be the master of the senses in practice. That, in fact, will liberate us from the karma chakra, the material destiny that we have. Can be changed by complete surrender to Guru and Krishna. So we can ask now if there are any questions.
It's said that the last word was like, you know, we have to have mercy of Guru and Krishna. But what about, say, people who don't have a guru but who still go to temples and worship Krishna with pure heart, will they achieve Krishna Lok immediately after their birth or
no? No. Guru is, you're saying pure heart, so that means if their heart is really pure, then they will obey the instructions of Krishna. I tried this argument myself when I was a new bhakta. I didn't even get away with it. I told it if I was living in the temple, I'll say, I'll just be a devotee of Krishna. That's what I told the devotees. I didn't want to surrender to the spiritual master. Because I knew that means, wow, you're really, then you really have to do everything. There's no freedom anymore. Enjoy your senses. And it's all cut off. You're completely subjugated. Disciple of the spiritual master. His word is law. So I said, I'm just a devotee of Krishna. I'm not going to surrender to the spiritual master. That's what I told the devotees. They pointed out in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Tad vidhi pranipati. If you are actually the pure devotee of Krishna, doesn't that mean you obey the order of Krishna? Can you be the pure devotee of Krishna and disobey the order of Krishna? That's my question. Is that possible? If they are actually the pure devotee of Krishna, that means they must obey the instructions of Krishna. Then they are pure devotees. You cannot say they are pure devotees of Krishna if they do not obey the instructions of Krishna. They are neophytes. You can say that. They are neophyte devotees. But you cannot say they are pure devotees. To become a pure devotee, you have to follow the instructions of Krishna. And Krishna instructs Tad vidhi pranipati. You must approach the spiritual master. So it's One cannot be a pure devotee unless one obeys the instructions of Krishna. And Krishna instructs that one must take a spiritual master. You cannot be a pure devotee unless you're chanting Shuddhanam. Someone says, I'm a pure devotee, but I don't chant any rounds. Is that possible? I'm a pure devotee, but I don't do any sadhana. I just go to the temple and I pray for some money and some, you know, and I'm a pure devotee. Is that possible? No. Pure devotee means he's following the instructions. Krishna says, Satatam kirtiyam tomam, always chanting about him. So a pure devotee means he's absorbed in chanting the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he's not only chanting, but he's avoiding, there's three different stages of chanting. There's the impure, offensive stage. There's the clearing stage, where you're becoming purified more and more. And then when you finally get completely purified, that is called the offenseless stage. Shuddha Nam, the pure name. So if someone is actually a pure devotee, that means they are chanting Shuddha Nam. They're chanting the pure name without any offense. What is the third offense? Do you know the third offense against the chanting of the holy name? To disobey the order of the spiritual master. So someone can say, fine, I won't have a guru that way. I won't have to worry about disobeying his order. But that's a misinterpretation. The third offense means you have to have a spiritual master and you have to obey him. That's what it means. Unless one actually has a spiritual master and is obeying him, his chanting is impure because he's disobeying Krishna's instructions. He's disobeying. It's also stated elsewhere too, Acharya Upasanam. It's stated in Mandaka Upanishad, Tadviganar Tam Saguru Eva Abhigatshat. It's stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tasmad Gurum Prapadyecha Jigyashu Shreya Uttamam. It is stated in so many places that you have to have a spiritual master. So how someone can say they're a pure devotee, they don't have a guru? That means they're an illusion. They're in a state of illusion. They don't realize what it means to be a pure devotee. A pure devotee means one who is fully surrendered to Krishna. And Krishna is saying you must have a spiritual master. But a pure devotee will automatically have a spiritual master. In fact, Krishna says in the Adi Purana, he says to Arjuna, one who is my devotee is not my devotee. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my actual devotee. So do you think you can be a pure devotee of Krishna unless you're a devotee of his devotee? Krishna doesn't think so. Krishna doesn't accept their devotion unless it is channeled through the devotee. He doesn't accept anyone who directly comes to him and refuses to respect his devotees. Now, granted, some may come to Krishna because they want to surrender to him, and that's fine. But when they actually surrender, if they've actually surrendered to Krishna, and from within the heart, he will give them guidance that now you must become disciple of my devotee. He will give them that intelligence. That was my experience. I didn't know about the movement. But somehow I discovered Krishna. I didn't really know anything about the Hare Krishna movement. Somehow I discovered Krishna. I started worshipping him. But when I became very, very serious to fully surrender to Krishna, then he, from within the heart, revealed to me that I had to take shelter of the spiritual master. Any more questions?
Prabhuji, we see so many temples in India and all over the world, and not all of them are taking shelter of spiritual master. So do they get better facilities in there?
Yes. And someone is not actually fully taking it. We also see so many temples also, the deity worship is a joke. I mean, they have rats on the altar, filthy, dirty. I mean, it's horrible. It's really disturbing to see how poorly they're worshiping Krishna, many places. Not dressed properly, dirty clothes, just horrible standards. But if anyone who is Krishna conscious to some extent, they'll make progress so they can become a pure devotee, if not in this lifetime, in a future lifetime. So everything I have said today makes sense to you all? Everything makes sense? Perfect sense? Nothing that doesn't make sense. It's all understood, clear as the bright noon. No clouds, no more fog.
How to develop like tolerance, like in all sorts of situations, like. Reference to like there's like six.
Tolerance is a very important thing. Tolerance means you understand that actually you're getting what you deserve. So there's no sense fighting it. That's one thing. If one patiently accepts the reactions from one's current and past misdeeds. I mean, being tolerant makes sense because actually you're getting what you deserve. Why you should fight it when actually you're just getting what you deserve. Of course, that doesn't mean you should be artificially tolerant. If some, you know, not if some demons kidnap you, you should. You can even kill them if you have to save yourself. Not artificially. Now, there are certain situations where you obviously should not be tolerant. Someone tries to murder you or rape you, or something like that. You shouldn't be tolerant. You can shoot them dead if you have to. Because this body is the property of Krishna. And you have the right to protect it. So there's one has to understand what it means to be tolerant. Not artificially. But in general, we should be very detached to what's going on here on this plane. Because our happiness really doesn't depend on that. Our happiness comes from our Krishna consciousness. If we think our happiness depends on my external sort of circumstances, then we'll be very agitated and disturbed and intolerant of so many things that happen around us. But that means you're on the mundane platform. If you're on the spiritual platform deriving your bliss from within, then for you, what's going on is practically speaking a movie. It's just like a movie. You're watching a movie. And you're seeing how Krishna is acting through his material nature to bless you in many ways. But it's not that the false ego is. You don't act. The point of tolerance is you don't act or reciprocate with what's happening with you on the basis of false ego, false pride. You have to filter everything through your shastric vision. See everything in terms of the scriptures. Just like Prabhupada explains in one purport. If a Brahmin becomes angry at you, you don't retaliate. You tolerate it. Actually, you should take their chastisement, the sweet smiling face, Prabhupada described like that. One should not be in a fighting mood. One should be very humble and very submissive.
How do you get out of an argumentative mentality?
Learn how to realize that God gave you two ears and only one mouth. Yes. That means you should be more into hearing than you are into speaking. If someone is saying something to you, just hear it. Don't be so eager to speak, say something back. Be very eager just to hear very deeply. And if it's not clear, then you should request clarification. Something doesn't make sense, it's confusing, then you request, can you kindly explain that to me more clearly? I don't understand. You have a right to get your intelligence satisfied. That right you have. And that's your duty, actually. One should inquire. That is given by Krishna. If something is not understood, you must inquire. That's your duty and responsibility.
So is it alright to, like, even just, I don't know, it seems like artificial sometimes to just, like, be silent. Is that okay to just be silent? But, like, then your mind still is probably, like...
No, if things are not clear, you shouldn't be silent, you should inquire.
Well, not things, just, like, ignore, like, the tendency or urge to, like...
throw a temper tantrum.
Counter arguments or whatever.
You have to understand, if you allow anger to overpower your intelligence, you're putting yourself in a very, very dangerous situation. If you find that you have a tendency, and we all do on some level have a tendency to allow anger to overpower intelligence, we have to understand it's a very, very dangerous position to be in. It can actually destroy our spiritual life. So, one has to be very, very conscious that I have a tendency to lose my temper and to act in ways that are irresponsible, that are destructive for my spiritual progress, that are destructive for my relationships with Vaishnavas, etc. Therefore, you should be very careful before you say anything. Very, very careful. Be in the mood of humble inquiry, but don't be so eager to speak your opinion, your feelings. Be more eager to carefully study your own feelings and opinion to make sure that they're proper before you try to propagate them. Does that make sense to you?
How's sometimes you say, like, with thoughts that we should just cut them off, like, you know? Cut off thoughts, like, certain thoughts, we have bad thoughts, and we should...
No, you can't just...
It doesn't work.
The mind is active by nature.
You said, like...
You have to replace it with a positive thought. You can't just turn it off.
You said in one thing that we should just we notice, oh, this is a lusty thought, or this is an angry thought, this is a greedy thought, we let it go in one ear and out the other.
But the real thing is, it's like a television set. You can't turn off, instead of turning off the television, you just have to flip the channel. That's the way to do it. Don't think in terms of cutting off and turning off the TV. Think in terms of flipping the channel. That's what you have to do. You can't turn off your mind. You can turn off the television set. But you can flip the channel. That's what you have to do. Don't turn off your mind. Flip the channel of your mind. That's all you have to do. Just flip the channel. The mind keeps going. See, there's channel A, which is the spiritual world. There's channel B, which is the material world. Our mind is addicted to the channel B. So So therefore we have a morning program where you can get your mind fixed in channel A. But there's a pulling. It keeps wanting to go back to channel B. You have to just train them. Every time it goes to channel B, you got to say, okay, mind, yato yato nishchalati manas chanchalam astadam. You have to bring the mind back to channel A. Okay, mind, there you go again. Come on back. It may go away a million times. You got to keep bringing it back, like that cowboy who's training the bucking bronco, you know. Sooner or later, that bucking bronco is going to give up and surrender. So it's a neophyte devotee has to struggle with that tendency of the mind to drift away from the spirit and become absorbed in matter. You have to keep bringing it back again and again, minute by minute, day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year, decade by decade. You're in this for the long haul. You have to keep bringing it back. You have to train it so it becomes habituated and naturally situated in its healthy state of the spiritual energy. It's not easy in the beginning for a neophyte to. No one says it's easy in the beginning. Because the tendency is, especially if you're a Westerner who's engaged in so many sinful activities, Western body people. Now, of course, in India now, it's all Westernized too, there. Everything, now in parts in Mumbai, anything goes. You know, you have sex with your. There's no restriction now. And the Mumbai youth now are having unrestricted sex pleasures like in the 60s in the US, the sexual revolution of the 60s. So it's, the whole thing is going down. But this uncontrolled sense gratification makes our minds very, very, very loose. Very loose. And that loose mind is a very, very dangerous thing to have. A loose mind is very, very dangerous. So we have to train that mind how to become very disciplined, very regulated, very fixed in Krishna consciousness. And the only way to do that is to work hard. Keep bringing it back. You have to be a determined mother to bring the child of your mind, make it a mature adult. It takes years for the mother to train the child to be an adult, doesn't it? So it's going to take you years of practice to really get your mind under control, to where you really want it to be. But you will be enlivened as you make progress along the way, because every time you make a little progress, it becomes more enlivening. Just like someone, you know, they're struggling just to pay their bills and they finally get to the point where they can start saving some money, that's enlivening for them. They paid off their debts and they can start saving a little money now. And then they get another raise and now they can save even more and they can get a house and, you know, it's a progressive thing. It's enlivening at every step. Even though you're not a pure devotee yet, you can be enlivened how you're making progress, how those things which pulled you down and tormented you, and now they're not doing that anymore. So that's an enlivenment for the sadhaka along the pathway. You haven't reached the destination yet, but you're getting closer. And the closer you get, the more enlivening it gets, the more encouraging it gets. Anything else? That's it? Finished? Inquiry finished? Malasana, what is your question?
I wanted to ask, it said that if somebody is very attached to someone else in a particular lifetime, then they are bound by that attachment and they take birth again to fulfill that?
Of course.
So if... person A is very attached to person B, but B is not attached to A, so then,
B is not entangled. If B is simply, is purely Krishna conscious, it's A's problem, not B's problem. But if A is attached to B and B is a pure devotee of Krishna, well, that's good news. Because A will want to stay with B, and if B goes back to Godhead, then A's in pretty good shape. Does that answer your question? Anything else? Everything has made sense? All questions answered now? No confusion? No bewilderment? Huh?
Too much attachment, they come and birds also.
The birds are very attached? Actually, attachment is a natural thing. You simply have to purify it by engaging in Krishna service. If you're really attached to someone, genuinely attached to them, and not your own sense gratification, then you will want the best thing for them. Then you will make them Krishna conscious. That's real attachment. You see, if I'm really attached to you, then I will think, well, she must become a pure devotee and go back to Godhead. If you're really attached to a person, then you want to see that they don't take birth again in this material world. If you simply wanted to enjoy them, then that means you're not really attached to them, you're attached to your sense gratification. That's what it really means. Someone who is genuinely attached to another person means they want the best for that person. So real attachment means real, and so in that sense, actual attachment is transcendental. But if you're really attached to that person's benefit, that's transcendental. Only a devotee can actually have that pure attachment. Just like the spiritual master is very attached to his disciples. He wants the best for them. He's always thinking, praying, speaking, feeling, willing for their benefit. So he's very attached to his disciples. He wants to see that they will not take birth again. So that's in that sense, in the material world, our attachment is really our attachment to our senses. We're not, we say we're attached to this person, oh, I love you, but actually I love my sense gratification. And I'm flattering you so you will gratify my senses. That's what's going on. I flatter you that you're such a beautiful person, such a beautiful woman. Now gratify my senses. That's what goes on in the name of attachment and love in the material world. That's cheating. That's simply a desire for sense gratification. You don't really love the person, you love your senses. And because they gratify your senses, you, quote, love them. But actually, you just love your own sense gratification. Only a devotee can actually love someone in the real sense of the term. Only a devotee can really love you. Others cannot. They can to some extent, but it's mixed, it's impure. It's always impure. I never got love from anyone like I got from Prabhupada. Never from anyone. I never knew what love meant. Actually meant until I came in contact with Srila Prabhupada. Because it was all tinged, it was dirty. It was tinged with desire for sense gratification. Any more questions?
Yeah, so like what Anup was asking, if somebody is just worshipping Krishna without accepting a spiritual master, and at the time of his death he remembered Krishna, then he'll go back to Godhead.
So the question is, can you get a college degree without enrolling in the university? That's really the question. Can you get a degree without enrolling? It happens sometime. What was his name? Rabindranath Tagore. He got an honorary degree from, was it Oxford or Cambridge? I forget. Oxford?
I'm not sure, but...
Yeah, he got an honorary degree. He never went to school. He never went to university. He never sat in one class, but he got an honorary degree. So that does happen sometimes. But my question is this. If you want a degree, should you just sit there in Bengal and wait for Oxford University to send your honorary degree? Or will you enroll in the classes? See, what is the surest bet of getting a degree? Waiting around, sitting here, sitting on the porch and waiting, when will Harvard send me my honorary PhD in architecture? Or actually enrolling in architecture school? What is your safest bet of getting that degree? Enrolling. So, guru means you're enrolling. Guru, diksha, means you're now a registered student in Krishna's university. You've registered. You're a registered student. You're going through the process of education. So you can actually get your degree. You can become a pure devotee. There are rare cases like that Muslim who was killed by the wild boar. I'm sure you've heard that story. In his Urdu language, they say haram. It means condemned. And so, you know, the Muslims say that, you know, pork is condemned food. So when the wild boar was killing him, he went haram and he got liberated. So it does happen. There are such cases by the extraordinary power of Krishna's holy name. But those are exceptional cases. You can't count on it. Well, I don't want a spiritual master because then I have to serve him. He's going to tell me to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning or, you know, 5 and chant 16 rounds, and I don't want to do that. I'd rather watch television, I'd rather watch CNN every morning than chant japa. So I want to keep my independence, and, you know, I won't take a guru. But I'm going to remember Krishna at the time of death. There is a slight chance you could, but it's the odds are against you. Frankly speaking, the odds are against you. The actual consciousness you will have at the time of death is the sum total of all your thoughts you had throughout your life, actually. Consider a calculator. You know, putting a number in, boom. You know, plus. You do that your whole life. And at the time of death, you hit the equal button, the total button. The time of death is when you get the sum total of all the thoughts, all the words, and all the deeds that you absorbed yourself in throughout your life. Now you get the end result, the time of death. That's what's going to happen to you. So if you refuse to follow the orders of Krishna, your tendency will be in that mood of still wanting to refuse Krishna's instructions. The time of death. I don't want a spiritual master. I'm going to ignore that instruction of Krishna. Do you think someone who wants to ignore the orders of Krishna can fully be absorbed in Krishna consciousness at the time of death? They're shunning Krishna throughout the life. No, I don't want to follow his order. But in the last minute, now I will fully accept Krishna. I was shunning him, now I will fully accept. It's not very likely. They can have some change of heart, thinking, well, and now I'll take a guru. I mean, who can I get initiated from? I'm dying tomorrow. Gotta have a quick diksha. Someone come help. Give me diksha quick. I'm dying in 10 minutes. Huh?
Many does this.
Tell me.
One person was suffering.
Louder?
One person was suffering from cancer. And their whole life, devotees tried to preach to them. They didn't want to take up Krishna consciousness. In the end, they were thinking, let me take Krishna consciousness. I do not know how Krishna conscious they were. And she was in her pain.
It is possible, theoretically, but it's very, very unlikely. The one who consciously ignores and rejects the teachings of Krishna could be purely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So these are contradictory things. Well, someone, we could say, while they were innocent, they didn't know. one could argue, well, they're illiterate, they never read the Bhagavad Gita, they didn't know that Krishna wanted them to have a guru. And they were just totally absorbed in worshipping Krishna. That could be an argument one could put forward. Speaking now. I'm thinking deeply what to say, and now I'm ready to speak. But now you can let me make mine, and you're welcome. So, if one is actually serious, very, very serious and sincere in their heart, even they're illiterate, and they didn't read the verse, and no one ever told them that they had to have a spiritual master. If they're very, very sincere and to totally surrender themselves to Krishna. Krishna is there as Chaitya Guru in the heart, and he will actually bring them in contact with the spiritual master. Even if they're not literate, they can't read the Bhagavad Gita, they're just a simple villager who really loved Krishna and wanted to please him. Such a person will be guided by Krishna within the heart. He will bring a spiritual master to that person, and they will understand, I must surrender to this person. Krishna will give them that intelligence. Tesham satata yuktanam vajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mamapayanti te. Those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the understanding in which they can come to me. You were saying?
Same point.
3 points?
Same point.
Same point, yeah. Confirmed. When an advanced devotee confirms that what you said was correct, and that's very auspicious.
I did not say correct. I said I was going to make the same point.
That confirms
started.
The point.
Okay.
That it's a valid point. If you were going to make the point also, then that obviously that confirms the point I made. So it's very auspicious when an advanced devotee confirms the point. By saying I was going to say the same thing. That is a confirmation. Isn't it? Yes. Confirmed. Questions more?
Prabhupada, at the time of death, like if a soul is leaving the body, does it immediately enter the next body or does it, I mean, what is the process by which it gets transferred?
This was a controversy on Thought for the Day, I remember. Because Prabhupada says different things in different places in his teachings about that. Sometimes Prabhupada says immediately and is the next body. Then it's also described how he goes to the planet of Yamaraj and he goes through a whole boot camp basically for get trained up for his next body. It's like someone who's inclined for eating any nonsense food. They're slated to get a hog body in their next life. So who would like to eat stool? You see, if someone offered you a plate of stool, would you want to eat that? No. So if your karma was to become a hog, then how you will handle it? So there's actually a training program in the Yamaloka where people get trained up for their next birth before they actually take the body. It's described in the Bhagavatam Purport. But of course, that the time factor is relative also. So actually, both in that sense, both things could be true. That period of time, just like in a dream, a second can seem like an eternity. A tiger is chasing you; you're trying to escape it. You know, you have a tremendous long nightmare, but it actually it just happened in a second. If you calculate it by waking time, but in the dream, it seemed like an eternity. So time is relative. So it actually, in that sense, both statements could be true: that you immediately enter your next body, and that you go through a whole extensive training program, because that's in a different time relativity. The training program. So both things can actually be true. But for a devotee, one instantly goes back to home, back to God. Actually, one goes, well, even for the devotees as a training program. If you look in the details, he goes to whatever planet, whatever place within this, within the material world, where Krishna is having his pastimes, and he is trained up in his or her rasa. And Krishna's manifest pastimes within this material existence. It's described in the Krishna book. Next lifetime, he goes to participate in Krishna's pastimes within this world. So you can say, well, how's he going back to Godhead? That is back to Godhead. You're with Krishna and his Leela. That is back to Godhead. Krishna, when Krishna manifests his pastimes in this world, it's not in the material world. The spiritual world dips into the material world, actually. Like it's just the spiritual world manifests here in the material world. So if one is actually in your next lifetime, you'll be trained up in Krishna's pastimes within this material world. But you will not, you will be back to Godhead, because back to Godhead, the spiritual world manifests in the material world in a way that's visible to the people of this material world. But it's actually the spiritual world. You will go back to Godhead immediately. Even though you'll be in a in this material world manifestation of the spiritual world.
So is there a chance of fall down in that state?
Hmm?
Is there a chance of fall down in that state?
There is always a chance of falling down, even when you go back to Goloka Vrindavan, because you are marginal. You are eternally classified as marginal and in, so that means you have an eternal freedom to take matter or spirit. It's your choice. You may say, well, that's unfair. Why I can't be, you know, locked into the spiritual world? Well, guess what? That's not a very nice position to be locked in anywhere with no freedom of action. Krishna doesn't want inmates. He doesn't want prisoners. He likes persons who have the choice to love him or leave him. If you raise a child, will you coerce him by threat of punishment to always be respectful to you? Or will you eventually, of course, when they're little, you can do anything. But, you know, as they grow up, you have to naturally give them freedom of choice and let them voluntarily choose to love you. So, Krishna does them. He gives us the choice, the freedom to love him or to leave him. So therefore, you will always have the tendency to choose either way. You can bloop whenever you want to for all of eternity. If you feel the material, if you know that Mumbai is, or wherever, you know, Tampa, Pune, that it's better than Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna will let you come back. If you prefer temporality, ignorance, and misery to eternity, knowledge, and bliss, Krishna will let you. He's not going to force you with handcuffs to stay in his dharma. But, you know, once you've stuck your hand in the fire, who wants to do it again? Once burned, twice shy. Questions more?
So Prabhuji, it's also said that once we are in material world, and when we go back, we never come back to the material world.
Yes, because who would... That is a general rule. But it's because you've once burned, twice shy. It is stated by Krishna. Punar janma vijayate, he never takes birth again. It's not that he couldn't take birth again, but he never does because he learned his lesson. He could. He has the option of doing that, but who would do that? It is a fact. It's directly stated, Punar janma na vijayate. He never takes birth again. He doesn't, but he could. He always could, but he won't because he's learned the hard way, the school of hard karma. He learned the hard way. Not going to make the same mistake again. So it's a fact, he won't come back. But he could. He has the freedom to do that. If he's so stupid, he could do it. Yeah. Any further questions?
Prabhuji, I also wanted to ask, like coming back to the question, when the soul is leaving the body, if he is going to get another human birth in the next birth, then does he still have to go the training program, or is it instant?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Someone is very pious. They never did any sins at all. They would go back to Godhead. Actually, if a person was purely sin, completely sinless, they would go back to Godhead. If they have some sin, even it's slight, there's either two, either the Vishnu Dutas take you or the Yama Dutas take you. So everyone has to go to court. He's not a pure devotee. There has to be something done. Everyone will go to see Yama. Everyone will be taken by the Yama Dutas. Even people who are pious will still have to go to the hell of being dragged by the Yama Dutas. It would seem from what we've read in the scriptures. Because even the pious persons, they have some sin. Some sinful activities. That happened to one yogi. When he was a little boy, he had pierced one ant with a straw in the rectum and killed it as a little child, you know, foolish thing. And so later on in his life, he became a great transcendentalist, but he was dragged to the court of Yamaraj just for that small offense as a child. One little thing he'd done as a child, killing an ant. He was taken to Yamaraj's court. What was the details? He was almost... Yeah, there was some thieves apprehended by the police. Yeah, that's what it was. And they accidentally thought that he was also one of the thieves, and they were going to put him to death. That's what it was, yeah. And he complained to Yamaraj. And Yamaraj said, well, this because of this. So the point is that even some small thing you did as a child could get you, could wind you up in Yamaraj's court. If you haven't become completely burned off all of your karma by becoming a pure devotee. It may be a light sentence, you know, or a warning ticket. You know. But everyone will, it appears from the scriptures that everyone will have to go to Yamaraj's court if they're not a pure devotee. It could be a light sentence, it could be a heavy one. Everyone has some degree of sin, otherwise they're going to go back to Godhead.
So even children have sin, even though they are not able to rationalize?
A child has accumulated karma from his previous lifetime also. Actually, according to, even if you eat food which is not offered to Krishna, that is sin. There is a hell for persons who ate bhog, even if they are vegetarians. It is called krimi bhojana. Krimi means worms and bhojana means eating. So, it is a planet filled up with worms, a gigantic lake of carnivorous worms who eat one another. So that is the reaction for eating unoffered food. Food that's not vishada. So even eating vegetarian food which wasn't offered to Krishna, one can go to krimi bhojana to be punished. And what to speak of other offenses, like inhaling, for example. Even by our breath, we are committing mass murder on so many microbial germs. The Jains know this, therefore they put a mask. But to keep the insects out. But actually, everything we do here, we're committing sin. Every time you get in your car, how many insects? Do you have the love bugs still here in Florida, every year, or that went away? When I was here in the 70s, there was a whole epidemic of every year there's a huge thing of love bugs all over Florida. They were flying around the sky mating with one another. That's why they call them love bugs. So they were just everywhere. They still have them? Oh, they did. Yeah, you drive down the street, you kill so many love bugs. They're making love, and you're killing them in the act of making love. And we read in the Vedas that happened, I think, to someone, and because of that, was it Pandu, wasn't it? Yeah, he killed the yogi, or someone became a deer so he could have love affair with a female deer was actually his wife or something like that. So he got severe reaction. So just imagine you're killing so many love bugs driving on the street in your car. So there's karma for everything we do. Everything has karma. Every insect that ends up in the radiator of your car, there's karma for everything. So therefore, one has to completely surrender to Krishna. There's bound to be some reaction for a pious person, because so many sinful things everyone's doing. The only way to become completely sinless is to surrender completely to Krishna, become a pure devotee. Otherwise, you're still tainted with sin, and there has to be reactions for that sin. So it's very likely that everybody will, you know, if the Vishnadutas don't take them, the Yamadutas will take them. It's very, very likely that scenario that will happen. Everyone will have their turn with the Yamadutas, the boys with the ropes. Anything else?
About the, like, how, like, it's like a 10 or 11 generations that are, like, delivered, right? Like, if you're, there's a devotee in the family. So, like, do those other family members, do they have to keep taking birth in lower species, or do they keep getting a human birth automatically?
Well, the question is, when do they get liberated? Do they get liberated when the devotee goes back to Godhead? It's an interesting question how that happens. I've never read in the Shastra how that unfolds. It will unfold, but how it unfolds, that I cannot say.
So it could theoretically still be a gradual process?
It's possible. I mean, certainly for my parents, they didn't become pure devotees while I was, you know, while they were here. They're both gone now. Somehow they will be liberated. I don't know whether they got liberated now, or whether, you know, or whether it's depending on when I actually enter into Goloka Vrindavan and that, you know, I don't know how it'll happen. But I know they'll be liberated. I know that day will be there when we'll be in Goloka Vrindavan and they can say, yeah, we, you know, we're really happy you became a devotee because now here we are. Because you had the intelligence, even though we didn't give you the proper training to become a devotee, because you had that intelligence, or that you're blessed with that intelligence, now we are here. They will thank me someday. I know that will happen. Someday my parents will be thanking me for saving them. Even at the time of death, we went, of my father, Mataji and I went, and we chanted Hare Krishna, and it was like he was just waiting for us to come, holding on to his life. And we came there, and he became very peaceful, and he left his body as soon as we went there and chanted Hare Krishna.
Also, you're saying, like, that it's at the end, it's like a calculation of thoughts, words, and deeds and stuff, like, and that's like the, like, sum total of, like, what are, like, what's going to happen to us or whatever. Yamaraj does a calculation of all the thoughts, words, and deeds.
Yamaraj has it. He has it all, every little detail recorded down.
So I'm wondering if spiritual things have, like, a greater weight. Like, what if you, like, I'm thinking, like, well, what if a person has passed, like, 20, 30, 40 years not being a devotee? So they have all this accumulated crud, like, all this horrible things. And then they, like, took the devotional life, but they only have a few years, and then they die untimely.
Doesn't matter. If actually even 1 second of pure bhakti can, it can be all expunged from your record. It just takes 1 second of pure bhakti, of complete surrender, to have everything expunged. All millions of lifetimes can be expunged. One pure utterance of Hare Krishna can destroy more sins than you could ever commit in millions of kalpas. One pure utterance of Hare Krishna. So therefore, chant with focus. Chant with intensity. that chanting, the pure chanting of Krishna's name, will burn off millions of lifetimes of pop sinful activities. Any other questions?
Prabhuji, when when her soul has gone back to Godhead, does he or she have the remembrance of the previous lifetimes?
I never really knew this, but I think it was last year or year before I was in Vrindavan. They put a letter every day on Prabhupada's desk in his room. And one day I read, and I oftentimes read the letter. Gopal Krishna always comes in and reads the letter, so I learned that habit from him. And you go in the room, you read what's... It's nice, you can read what's in the letter. You're right there in Prabhupada's room. So the letter, actually, Prabhupada was saying like that. When you go back to God and you remember... at least your devotional activities that you engaged in this planet, in this lifetime. You remember the day you got initiated, you remember, you know, all these pastimes you have with your Guru Maharaj, those are all eternally in your heart now. All, you know, the nice, just like even these activities we're doing now, these are all eternally etched in our memories. Even when we go back to God and remember these times we had together here in Tampa, you see. So yeah, I became very enlivened when I considered that. All those, you know, the first time I met Prabhupada, that's eternally in my heart. I can always go back in my mind's eye and relive that moment when I first saw Srila Prabhupada, I first heard him speak, the first time I had interaction with him. All these things are eternally stored and will be remembered even in Goloka Vrindavan. That was very exciting for me. Because Prabhupada won't look the same in the spiritual world. And that form, the old man form of Prabhupada, is very dear to us. That's how he attracted us in that form. So actually the remembrance of that form, we will always have. We'll always be able to see Prabhupada in that form also. The spiritual world will be able to see his Swarup and his Krishna's Leela. But there's also the Leela he had here, and those will be able to see Prabhupada simultaneously in both forms, and be able to reciprocate with him in both forms. That's pretty exciting to think about it. We'll be able to reciprocate Prabhupada in the old man's body, and also in his eternal spirit. Even in the spiritual world, we'll be able to see that form. If we desire to see that form, if we desire to see Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue, all these things are available. The desire trees fulfill all desires. If that is in the mood of pure devotional service, then all desires can be fulfilled in the spiritual world. There's no sense gratification, but all in the service of Krishna. All desires can be fulfilled, and they are in the service of Krishna. That is full freedom. Any other questions?
So, Prabhuji, do we also remember all our past lives or just...
The mundane stuff, I don't remember in the letter what Prabhupada said about that. Would you want to? That's my question.
That was a horrible...
Would you want to remember when you were a snake crawling around the jungle? Biting people? Would that be a relishable memory for you?
Maybe I can give some memory.
Huh?
I can give you, take a third canto and read when you were in the womb of the mother. You would know it.
The real fact is, some people say, well, why doesn't God let us remember our previous lives? Because that would encourage us to get out of here. But the real fact is, if you remembered even what it was like to be in the womb right now, have you heard of the psychological disorder called post-trauma stress disorder? You heard of that? PTSD. Post-trauma stress disorder. People who went through 9-1-1, they were in the building, in the Twin Towers, who survived. Many of them are going through very intense psychotherapy right now because they have horrible nightmares or a state of paranoia because they remember what it was like being in those towers when the airplanes hit and the whole building came crashing around them. I mean, they're psychologically messed up for life from that experience. So if we had, if we even remember what it was like to be in the womb, we would be psychological, you know, basket cases. We'd be psychological wrecks if we even remember what it was like to be in the womb. We'd be so afraid of things, so paranoid. So the forgetfulness of our even being in the womb, the forgetfulness of previous lifetimes, that is a special mercy of God upon us. Special mercy of God.
It says in the Bhagavatam that in the womb of the mother, the living entity is suffering so much that he's praying, let me be out of here and I'll be your devotee. And then he forgets.
He comes out and everybody goes, oh, isn't he cute? Isn't he a darling little boy? Goo, 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 goo. And then the little baby thinks, ah, this is the life.
I'm the center of attraction.
I'm the center. Everyone, I just move my arm and everyone, ah. Oh. I just open my eyes and everybody goes, oh. Every little thing is like he's a superstar, you know. And he forgets the promise he made of the womb. Completely forgets it, carried away by the, by being the center of the cynosure of all eyes.
Mentioned in third canto in very great detail.
You what?
It's mentioned, this thing is mentioned in great detail. In
great detail in the third canto. You want to tell us some more of the nectar from the third canto?
Yeah.
Do you have any points? On your realizations are always very profound. Do you have any points you'd like to add to our discussion today? So,
you're going to go late today, or?
No, I just got off and
oh, okay. That's good. That's good.
What is it?
She said she's going to call up and tell them that she's going to be late.
Huh.
It's quarter till 9.
Ah. So, any other questions?
Prabhupada, I have one more question. Like, if we have dreams of the spiritual master, should we take it as a...
What is it right now?
He's saying that if she, they have a dream of the spiritual master, and
should take it as authoritative.
Yeah,
depends on what he's what depends on what he said in the dream. Because you can also, the mind is also, you know, polluted. You can actually concoct things also. If it's, if it is confirmed by, you know, what you read in Prabhupada's books is confirmed by the things you've heard from him when he's awake, you know, when you're awake, then you can accept it. If it matches the instructions he's giving to you in your waking state, then you can take it as direct order from Guru Maharaj. But if it goes against, he says, stop chanting Hare Krishna. Then you understand, you know, it's the personality of Kali, you know, posing as your spiritual master. So you have to be careful about dreams. It has to be in line, has to be confirmed by in the things you're receiving through, you know, his direct instructions to you. Be very careful. Dreams are very dangerous because we're not completely pure and our dreams can be impure. Be careful. But they, it, the spiritual master can indeed do that. He can. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati was repeatedly appearing to Srila Prabhupada and telling him, come out and join me. Take sannyas. And Prabhupada used to think, oh, this is horrible. How can I leave my family life? But it was a special arrangement, actually, for Prabhupada to have a greater family life. So yes, the guru, spiritual master can, in fact, appear to you in dream. He can instruct you within the heart. It simply depends on your degree of purity, especially after his physical disappearance. You don't like to think about it, but it does happen. Especially after his departure. When he's here, we should focus on getting his, you know, connecting with him as much as we can by, you know, going where he is, or, you know, hearing his tapes.
You
know, hearing about his pastimes from your other god brothers and god sisters. We should focus on the external manifestation as long as he's physically present.
Okay. one can inquire from the spiritual master, yeah, if I had a dream this way,
yeah,
it's okay. But is that what you want to follow?
Yeah, you can confirm. Guru Maharaj, in a dream, you told me this, is this valid? You can ask.
Because I remember someone, Guru Krishna Maharaj was saying that some disciple told Guru Krishna Maharaj, but in dream, Guru Krishna Maharaj was giving instructions. Guru Krishna Maharaj said, I never gave you this instruction.
He denied it was valid, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the mind can run. We can run amok if we give the mind power of attorney to be careful. Everything has to be confirmed by, you know, the written word of the spiritual master, the spoken word, the recorded word. Those are the things. It's like the only instructions that I've, you know, I take those letters that Prabhupada wrote me and what's in his books. It's the guiding principle of my life. Not, I don't try to interpret dreams to get my guidance. I know that's very dangerous. I just try to dive deeper and deeper and deeper, just like you have instructions, personal instructions to you, right here. Those instructions, those simple instructions you received from Adana Swami on the wall there, they have unlimited depth. You can dive deeper and deeper and deeper into those same instructions for all of eternity. Your spiritual master can continue to give you. My point is, his giving you that instruction is actually an eternal thing. The moment of receiving that instruction from him can go on for all of eternity. And you can dive deeper and deeper and deeper and have more and more and more profound realizations just from taking that one direct order you receive from him. I have a few from Prabhupada, but I've seen over the last 35 years, but just by coming back again and again and looking again at those instructions, meditating on them again and again and again, that there's no end how much Prabhupada can continue to instruct me and enlighten me further and further and further and further just by remembering that simple instruction he gave me. So in this way, every disciple should embrace whatever orders they've received from their spiritual master. And just come back to those instructions, meditate on them, go deeper and deeper. And then Prabhupada told me, he said, I see that you're a very sincere and enthusiastic boy. He said, now continue enthusiastically as you are doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. So I have taken that. That's an incredible instruction from Prabhupada. So I have taken that, and my whole life actually revolves around that instruction. My whole existence, as it is stated by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gurudev, your mercy is all that I'm made of. So that I take that as, that's my life. To live out, to live in that instruction. That is my existence. Apart from that, I'm just a dead man. You know, helplessly lost in whereabouts unknown within the modes of material nature. But by taking that instruction I've received from Prabhupada and embracing it as my very life and soul, and living that instruction, meditating on that instruction, living, eating, everything, breathing, everything, that instruction is my life and the other ones as well. And that's in this way, whatever direct order you receive, you have to embrace it as your very life and soul. If you fell off the edge of a cliff, and somehow you grabbed a branch as you went over the edge, how tightly would you hold onto that branch? So whatever direct instructions you've received from Guru Maharaj, you should just hold on as if your life depends on it, because it does. Your life depends on holding tightly onto those orders you received from Guru Maharaj. You see? That's how it works. Your spiritual master is more present in the form of his instructions than he is in the form of his body. Vapu is very important, but even more important is money. We saw many people who were directly serving in Prabhupada's physical presence, they are long gone, engaged in all sinful activities. But those devotees who hold tightly to the words of Guru Maharaj, embracing those words of Guru Maharaj as their very life and soul, they are still going strong in their Krishna consciousness and they're still feeling that connection with their spiritual master. Your spiritual master has the power to be personally with you at every minute, to be personally guiding, blessing you, and inspiring you at every minute, wherever you are, at home, at work, on the commute, in the grocery store, you know, wherever you are for all of eternity. He has the power to be with you, bless you, and inspire you at every second. You simply have to hold tightly onto his instructions. And then he will be physically with you. Well, I mean, not physically. I mean to say personally with you. Not physically. That was a mistake. I meant to say personally with you. Just like he's standing right there. He'll be right there in your heart. He'll be personally with you, blessing, guiding, and inspiring you at every step. Questions more?
How does a guru disciple relationship work in the spiritual world if you have like your guru have his like original like
what guru?
How's the guru disciple relationship work in the spiritual world if everyone's involved in Krishna's pastime?
Yes. Well, your Guru Maharaj will be. You'll find your Guru Maharaj is in Krishna's pastimes, and you're also in Krishna's pastimes. And you will always be in a subordinate relationship with your Guru in Krishna's pastimes. Just like now, you're engaged in a pastime of Krishna at this very minute. It's called Chaitanya Leela. The ISKCON movement founded by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada is a pastime of Lord Chaitanya. So right now, you're serving your spiritual master in a leela which goes far beyond just him. He's also a part of the leela, and you are also part of the leela, but you are his subordinate in that leela. So just as now, you are a subordinate participant in the leela under the wing of your Guru Maharaj, so in the spiritual world also. You'll always be under the wing of your Guru Maharaj, and always under his blessings and mercy as you engage in your pastimes with Krishna. As a gopi, as a gopa, as a butterfly, as a flute, as a cow, as a calf, as a blade of grass, as a rock, whatever your rasa is, you will always know that here's my Guru Maharaj, and this is by his mercy I'm able to serve Krishna. And you'll always be worshipping your spiritual master and with all of your heart and soul, and as you'll always be worshiping Krishna also simultaneously.
So is there still like a chance for like service and inquiry?
Of course. You will have more freedom there than you do here. Any freedom that you have here, you will have a million times greater in Goloka Vrindavan. To inquire here, you have a question, but you have to wait. Well, I sent him an email and it's going to take me a while to get an answer. You see, in the spiritual world, you don't have those kind of constraints. Spiritual world, you have open access to your spiritual master. With no restraints.
But why would they need inquiry? Because they're full of knowledge.
Why would one even have to inquire about anything in the spiritual world? Look in Krishna book and see if anybody in Krishna's pastimes ever inquiring about anything. Just read the Vrindavan Leela and see if anybody ever inquires about anything.
Yeah, because they're full of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Living entity is full of knowledge.
There is rasa also, you see. You have to understand that there is yoga maya acting in the spiritual world to increase the sweetness of the pastimes.
That is pastimes of Krishna.
And the pastimes amongst the devotees also. Krishna means Krishna and his devotees. You think you only have a relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world?
No.
No.
But I mean philosophy, inquiry. philosophical inquiries there.
That's an interesting question. Will the disciple ever put forward a philosophical question to the spiritual master and the spirit? If they wanted to, they certainly could. That's a thing. If they want to, they certainly can. But it may be what is, you know, it might, instead of a philosophical question, it might be what was in Krishna's lunch bag this morning? You see. What sweet of all the sweets that Mother Yashoda put in Krishna's lunch bag, which one did he relish the most today? You see. Those kind of questions become more, you see.
How's that work though? If, like, if the disciple and the spiritual master are in different past, like different aspects, if like one's a rock and one's like a, I don't know, cowherd boy or something, how's that work? Like, how would that interaction, is it?
The spiritual world, you can be whatever, actually, you can be whatever rasa you want, Prabhupada explains. This is, I mentioned this to one sannyasi, he immediately became, oh, where's the evidence? Couldn't believe it, but actually I have the exact quote in the Veda base where actually Prabhupada says that. You can be whatever rasa you want to be. So if your spiritual master has a certain rasa with Krishna and you're really attached to your spiritual master, you can just follow him into his rasa, whatever rasa he is, and you can be in the same rasa with your own, your Guru Maharaj. You have full freedom. If you're very attached to your spiritual master, you want to, you know, if he's a big rock, you want to be a little rock, you know, underneath him, or whatever, you know. If he's a gopi and you want to be an assistant gopi working under him, or if he's a gopa, you know, whatever it may be. If he's a big flute, you want to be a junior flute, you know. Whatever it may be, you have full freedom to do that. Krishna's pastime.
Isn't it wise first we think about getting out of here?
Isn't it wise to think about getting out of here? Well, if you think about how wonderful it is in the spiritual world, that gives you some impetus. So sometimes we do talk about how nice it's going to be in Goloka Vrindavan. It's just like, you know.
Yeah, we think about it. And
just like, that's why Krishna actually came and displayed his pastimes for that purpose, of so attracting us to come back there.
But we are thinking about our rasa instead of Krishna's rasa.
Well, the thing is, you can't really. It's dangerous. We have to be careful. We don't enter into that dangerous realm known as Sahajism. It's a very dangerous realm, where I start to think, well, I think I would like to be this in the spiritual world. So I'll start meditating on myself as a gopi or as a cowherd boy. Or this is very, very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. We have to understand that actually we do have a constitutional nature in the spiritual world. It's already there. And that nature will be revealed in due course of time by the collective mercy coming down through all the acharyas. Krishna, the original guru, Lord Brahma, Narad Muni, Veda Vyas, on down to your present Guru Maharaj. There's a collective mercy which comes down through all these acharyas, which actually reveals to you who you actually are in your relationship with Krishna.
Isn't it that a pure devotee, he does not even desire anything, and leaving everything to Krishna, and whatever he decides.
That's right. That is the move that will qualify you to regain your eternal identity in the spiritual world. You think, well, I would like to be this or that. You have your own conditions on your service. Well, you know, I have to be, you know, this rasa. No, you just have to be completely sold out servant of your spiritual master. That's all you have to do. Keep yourself in that focus. I'm simply the eternal servant of my spiritual master. Whatever order he gives me for all of eternity, that is my life and soul. Keep yourself always fixed in that consciousness, and then by his mercy and the mercy of the previous acharyas, you will actually realize who you are in the pastimes of Krishna. There will be no confusion about how to balance your guru relationship with Krishna, your relationship with Krishna. That's not even an issue. The issue is your dhamma-nartav. That's the issue. You see, don't try to sidestep the real issue, which is the dhamma-nartav in your heart. The lust, the anger, the greed, the pride, the laziness, these bad qualities you have, that's the real issue. not how can I relate with Guru and Krishna at the same time.
In the spiritual life.
No, that's not an issue. Don't try to, you know, divert things away from the real problem that you have, which you're attached to your anartas. You're holding on to him for dear life. I like my anartas. You have to let go of those anartas. Come off the Neophyte platform. That's what you have to do. And then everything will come automatically. Questions more?
I wanted to ask, like, considering our situation here in Tampa, where we don't have much association of devotees, when we perform our devotional service, many times we are sort of in doubt about the decisions that we make, whether that is going to please Guru and Krishna. So how do we know? At every, I mean, very
call up Mataji.
Yeah, she can always write to me.
You can.
Then you can get the answer.
You have a counselor. You have a counselor system. You have to consult your counselor.
Because I may give something, and counselor may something. There will be a conflict.
No, on philosophical points, you can always ask us. But as far as practical things, what does Radhanath Swami want you to do? That you have to go through your counselor. What would Radhanath Swami want me to do? I cannot say. I know him. He's my dear friend. We have a very warm relationship. But I don't intimately know exactly how he wants to guide his students. That's his counselors are being regularly counseled by him, how to be counselors. So you have to work through your counselors to understand what would Guru Maharaj want me to do in this situation. You really have to have a good relationship with your counselor, whoever that is. Where are they, in India? Yeah. You have to get a calling card, you know, for cheap call. Do they have a telephone? Yeah, you call your counselor up. You should be regularly in contact with your counselor because he's representative of your spiritual master. You should be regularly in contact with your counselor. That's right. But philosophical points, you can always consult myself and Mataji. But practical matters and exactly what Radhanath Swami wants you to do, you have to work through your counselor. We cannot take that role. It's not our position to do that. Anything else? Everything makes sense? No problema? Everything's understood? Okay. All right, we'll stop here. Pranta Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.